And I think one of those most important pillars, and this gets to what you were speaking about with your client, is this notion of understanding someone's intrinsic motivation. What is it that's bringing them to the table in the first place? And connecting your messaging, connecting your marketing to that deeper meaning. Understanding what is it that's meaningful to your customer and how can we serve those needs, whether those are subconscious or fully conscious.
Welcome to Centricity, the go-to podcast for B2B executives designed to equip you with deep insights into your buyer's needs so you can consistently deliver exceptional value and generate transformational results with greater efficiency. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Cecilia Lang Rhee to discuss behavior science, your sales and marketing superpower. If this is your first time listening, we're so glad you're here and we hope you enjoy the episode. If you're a regular listener back for more valuable insights, we encourage you to leave us a rating and review. Now, let's dive in.
Welcome to Centricity, the go-to podcast for B2B executives, designed to equip you with deep insights into what your buyers need so that you can deliver exceptional value and generate transformational results with greater efficiency than you ever have before. Today, we have an incredible guest and gift that you're here, Cecilia Lang Rhee. Cecilia combines product strategy, user savvy, behavioral design, and she has pioneered consumer products that help people lead healthier, happier lives. With a background in chronic disease prevention, Cecilia has applied the science of behavioral change to build incredible products at 23andMe, Meta, and Cecilia, you're with somebody new now. Who is it?
That's right. I've recently started a new position at a startup called BioLink. We are building a new non-invasive continuous glucose monitor. So I spent some time over in the social media space working at Facebook and now back in the healthcare space.
Cecilia also has this little degree from a place called Stanford University, which I think gives you some credibility. And if nothing else, I know after talking, you understand the powerful levers of human motivation and how people buy and how people change and understand. Oh, so the backstory is I've got this snazzy photograph of you on stage at IIEX, an exchange of insights and innovation that you were speaking. And a friend of mine was in the audience and snapped this picture of you standing underneath the trans-theoretical model of behavioral change, which has been a book and a science and a way of thinking that just revolutionized my ability to help my clients. And there you are, standing right under it, talking about pre-contemplation and contemplation and trying to, I think my interpretation would be trying to help people behave in a better way as marketers and salespeople and product development in a way that's focused not on what our client's abilities or our company's abilities are, but on what the buyer might need to progress in their journeys. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm extremely passionate about efforts to bring the learnings, the experiences of academia into the market and help companies, help marketers become more efficient and ultimately, you know, create products that are going to get our customers to the behaviors that we're hoping for faster, easier, and more delightfully than was possible before. And, you know, I as you mentioned before, I had my academic training at Stanford where I was really thinking about using these theories specifically within kind of a healthcare context. But what I quickly learned after leaving academia and entering the corporate world is that these theories have so many applications outside of just healthcare, outside of the lab, that can really help us to understand the levers and underlying motivations of behavior and ultimately make our efforts as marketers, as salespeople, more effective.
You're on Centricity. We know that the data shows us that customer-centric companies are about 60% more profitable than companies who are. We know that the focus is so easy to go wrong because as a manufacturer of something, for example, I'm expert at manufacturing that thing. So I tend to start talking about that thing that I do, not the problem that it solves for the buyer. And I would assume that you've seen that too. So tell us how centricity, or the transcendental theorem of behavioral change, if you want to say it the long way, tell us, how does that apply in the business? I mean, you sit at the C-suite level. You talk to the executives who are perhaps skeptical of what marketing and sales does. Tell us what it's like in practical reality. Why should a CEO listen to what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that arming your marketing teams with a baseline knowledge of behavioral science is like starting them on first base. So, you know, whereas today you might be optimizing your messages by running round after round of A/B testing, doing expensive market research, extensive user research, or frankly, a lot of times it's trial and error. What behavioral science does, it helps you start two steps ahead, because you can target your marketing, you can target your outreach to something that's real, which is these well-established psychological user needs that might be hidden just below the surface. And all you really need to know is what to target. So instead of kind of just throwing darts at a wall and seeing what sticks, or going based on gut assumptions, behavioral science gives us this foundational framework to very quickly and very easily understand what's going on under the hood, the hidden user needs, motivations, and blockers that are most relevant in that moment. And so ultimately, that lets teams get to the most effective message much more quickly and easily, because we're really starting with a set of baseline knowledge about what any given prospect might need at a certain point in that journey to becoming a customer. So we can understand what is driving that behavior, not just who's doing it. And I think that's really important, because the reality is, in a lot of cases, people are influenced by factors that might be subconscious and outside of their control, right? So even if we think we know who our customers are, even if they're telling us what they think they want, they probably can't tell us everything that's even going on inside their own heads or informing their decisions. And so I like to say that behavioral science saves organizations money, saves organizations time, because you're standing on the shoulders of giants. I kind of compare it sometimes to like putting together IKEA furniture. So sure, you know, you might be able to put together your chair or your desk without the instruction booklet showing you how all the parts fit together, but it's probably going to take you a lot longer, and you're probably going to fight with your spouse or fight with your roommate a lot more, right? So I see behavioral science as that behavior instruction booklet for marketers. It tells us those pieces that we need to pull together for us to have our desired outcome. And in my experience running digital marketing campaigns at 23andMe, we found that when we started our campaign development process by first consulting and rooting our work in relevant behavioral science theories, we ended up getting to higher conversion messages in about half the time. So it would often only take us one or two rounds of A/B testing with theory-based messages to see the desired conversion lift we were looking for, versus before it was often three, four rounds of testing in any given campaign, which takes design resources, it takes development resources, it takes money and time. And so that's really the power of behavioral science, and that's why it really saves organizations time and resources.
I mean, I think I can give a really easy example of what that looks like for the buyers of marketing and sales services. Almost everybody has had a terrible experience having hired an ad agency, eventually saying it didn't move the needle and firing them, and then saying, marketing doesn't work. Well, I can tell you, based on the science, probably what happened. And the science informs us that there are three best practices, we'll call them, that help people understand and become aware of how to solve a problem. Most people don't know that only 30% of those best practices work at the closing table, late stage deals. So if your ad agency that is expert at creating awareness, enlightening people, maybe even inspiring them to explore this, if they don't understand that humans need different things before they'll actually change their behavior, then you're leaving your sales and marketing teams ill-equipped. And that's why, business leaders, you think marketing doesn't work. It's not that it doesn't work. It's just what you've hired and experienced, most likely. There's 80,000 ad agencies, roughly, in America today. Most of them are expert at this early stage behavioral modification, we'll call it that. But they're really ill-equipped late. And I love working with a marketer like you who says, we understand these, there's differences in what works late stage from early stage. That's a great test. If you want to, executives, ask your marketing team, ask your agency how a human needs different information before they change behavior instead of creating awareness. What do they need then? And most won't
Absolutely.
Be able to answer.
You know, I always like to say that I'm not a huge fan of Nike's slogan, just do it, right? And frankly, I think to your point, this just do it approach is a big reason why many marketing communications fall flat and fail. Because the reality is, from a science perspective, from a behavioral perspective, 85% plus of your customers or your prospects are not going to be ready to perform the call to action that you want them to perform at any given moment. They're just not going to be ready. So if you're pushing them to move forward without building that foundation of readiness, you're going to lose people. You know, I think we often know this. Yeah, we know this, right? In our guts, we know this instinctively, that folks might need convincing in different ways at different points along the sales journey. But what a lot of people don't know is that there's actually, as you mentioned, a specific theory in behavioral science that addresses this. And it's called the trans-theoretical model, or the stages of change model. And essentially, this trans-theoretical model teaches us that people have to move through 5 stages of change before they're ready to perform a new behavior or quit an old one. And, you know, it was actually originally developed to help people quit smoking. But what's cool about it is that it has a lot of similarities to a traditional marketing funnel or sales funnel. So we start in a phase called pre-contemplation, where people are generally unaware or unconcerned that there's even a problem. Then we move through phases of contemplation, where they need to weigh the pros and cons of changing. They need to then prepare to make that change and create an actionable plan to fit it into their life. Then finally, once they take action, they may need support integrating that new behavior, that new software, that new tool into their lives. And then finally, in the final stage, as they're in maintenance, you know, you're working out the kinks of how it fits within your lifestyle, and you're making sure that this is the right thing for you. And really, what's most compelling about this model, as opposed to, say, a standard marketing funnel, is that the science gives us at each of these steps, all the way from just early, you know, outbound awareness, outbound marketing, all the way through contracting, is targeted techniques for what we can do to encourage people to that next step. So you were kind of alluding to this, but in that early pre-contemplation stage, so you could call that outbound lead generation marketing, it's much more about raising someone's awareness about the alternatives to their status quo. As you mentioned, there's a lot of firms that are great at that, a lot of firms that are great at getting your name out there, sharing the benefits of your product, helping compare you to the status quo. But it's really important that we don't push people into action at that stage yet, because they're just not ready. But then, as contrast, take the preparation phase, which we might say is equal to trying to close a customer. You're in the final stages of contracting. You're working out exactly the deal that's going to work for their needs. In that phase, it's much less about awareness, much less about comparison, and more about reducing barriers to entry or helping them make a concrete plan to change. And so I think what's happening a lot of time in the market is that people are using the wrong strategies for the wrong phases. And there's so much that this theory can help us get more specific, more targeted, and fix.
I've got 3 observations I want to make and get your opinion if I'm right or not.
Please.
So one, you know, the idea of awareness is overblown, in my opinion, because I could be 100% aware. I'm going to stick with the science for now. I could be 100% aware of my need to quit smoking and continue smoking, right? Mm-hmm. What hasn't happened yet is I haven't been enlightened to why quitting smoking matters to me, to my objectives, to my financial gain, my social gain, my strategic gain. Unless I'm enlightened to how this thing matters, this product or service matters, then I can sit at being 100% aware and not moving forward. So I think we've got to shift. I think marketing should shift. Awareness, who cares? Right before we hit record, I was talking to Cecilia about an effort to reach very specific companies in a very specific part of the country. And there's probably going to be 50 people that we're reaching, because awareness doesn't matter. But there's 50 people who my client's solution impacts radically, financially and strategically, and even environmentally in this case. So it's going to matter to them. So everybody else beyond the 50 companies, they could be very aware that my client exists, but who cares? So awareness, is the wrong pursuit. I think I hear too many B2B marketers talking about awareness. So I guess that wasn't a question, was it? That was a statement. Am I right? Am I on track there?
You're absolutely on track there. My mantra is awareness is not enough to change behavior. It's not enough to push you to get the desired behaviors or desired, you know, calls to action from your prospects and customers. If awareness was enough to change behavior, everyone would be healthy and fit and, you know, running 5 miles a day and not eating sugar, right? We all know these things. For example, again, I'm taking health as a metaphor here, building on your example of quitting smoking. We all know that smoking is bad. We all know that eating junk food is bad for us. And clearly that's not enough because clearly those behaviors still persist. So we need to take an approach that helps build the bridge from awareness to action. And what behavioral science does is it tells us those pillars that are in the middle, right? That you can leapfrog across from awareness to action. And I think one of those most important pillars, and this gets to what you were speaking about with your client, is this notion of understanding someone's intrinsic motivation, someone's story. What is it that's bringing them to the table in the first place? And connecting your messaging, connecting your marketing to that deeper meaning. You know, not just say an offer, a deal, not just comparing yourself to the competitors, but understanding what is it that's meaningful to your customer and how can we serve those needs, whether those are subconscious or fully conscious.
The FitzMartin approach to research is simple. Start with data. We use statistical analysis and data visualization to clarify the haze around customer sentiment, behavior, and lifetime value metrics. Our most recent study helped a financial institution understand a group of new customers, identify their ideal customers, and craft a plan to acquire more of those ideal customers. Visit fitzmartin.com/solutions. Again, that's fitzmartin.com/solutions to download a free sales barrier analysis worksheet to find the gaps and barriers in your organization and read for yourself about the values a partnership with FitzMartin can deliver to you.
Here's another practical observation I want your opinion on. You mentioned that there's bridge to action. I'm totally going to steal that. It's going to be in my next book. I love it. The idea of looking backward at your old behavior while considering looking forward your new behavior is a very important step to understand as a sales and marketing organization. I rarely see a sales or marketing organization being willing to put in front of their customer, their buyer, their prospect rather, rarely saying, you can continue your old behavior. This is what it would look like. And here's our behavior if you change and buy our product or service. We're trained to teach just the future looking, the forward looking view, but we rarely show the old looking back view and help. I mean, that seems courageous to me to say, Cecilia, you may not want to buy this. You can keep doing things the way you're doing now. That's fine. Now, here's a path forward. But if we know, it's predictable, right? If we know humans are going to look back at their old behavior and look forward at a potential change in behavior, and if we ignore the fact that they're looking back, then what do? They wonder, they think the agenda is now the seller's agenda because you're not being honest to what I'm doing as a buyer. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. What you're talking about is actually a validated technique in behavioral science literature that we talk about when we talk about the trans-theoretical model or the stages of change model. And what we're really trying to do here is to get our customers, get our prospects to reflect on what their lives would be with and without the change. So we can describe this product all we want. We can list out its features, its benefits until the cows come home. But if we're not encouraging in those early stages, right? Again, this is the pre-contemplation stage, the contemplation stage, top of the funnel, encouraging that reflection on how our product relates to where this person wants to go in their life or where this business wants to go in their life, and comparing that to the existing status quo, we're going to be unable to spur that motivation to change because sticking with the status quo is always going to be easier than making a change. And so at this phase, it's really about weighing those pros and cons and doing so in this reflective way is actually a really validated technique that we see as being effective for helping move people from just consideration, thinking about your product, until actually, you know, taking that action to take it on.
I love that. That's so important, because how many salespeople have you ever heard say, I can't believe, Celia, I showed Celia the product, the service, and it's so clear, this is so good for her, and she can't buy. And we're so used to not understanding, well, gosh, there's internal organizational changes. There's 5 levels of approval. I had a great meeting once with a Fortune 500 organization, and the CMO literally said, quote, I would love to work with you corporately. We're not onboarding any vendors. I'm like, wait a second. You want to buy from me, but you can't because you're not willing to go through the pain of internal change, even though you know it's best for you. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the answer. Yes. And it's like, you can be frustrated, but it's just, the key is just acknowledging, right? There's not that deals are complex, but acknowledging that the status quo is often the winner and it has nothing to do with your product or service or offer. We could talk about this stuff all day long. What, in your experience, how can people become better salespeople or better marketers? I mean, we've just referenced one idea, looking back, looking forward, acknowledge that humans need that and we should speak to that. But how else could listeners apply this understanding of human behavior as they change?
Yeah, definitely. I think another model that I like to think about is the COMB model, the COMB model, which really talks about how to perform a given behavior, you have to have 3 pieces in place. The customer has to have the capability, the ability to do that behavior. So in the example you were just given, the puzzle pieces have to be there. There has to be organizational alignment. There has to be budget, right? All of the logistical parts have to be there. The second aspect is motivation. They have to want to perform this new behavior, to adopt this new way of being. And that goes back to what we're talking about with this notion of intrinsic motivation. How can we, as marketers, in these early stages of selling to people, encourage our prospects to reflect on their current status quo and think about, you know, using storytelling, evocative imagery to encourage our customers to reflect on how their status quo is impacting their life and how it might be better in the future. This, within our literature, we call dramatic relief, which is a very dramatic name for essentially just encouraging that set of reflective exercises early in the sales process to help build intrinsic motivation and align the features of your product to really, you know, the ultimate user goals. And then finally, in order to create this behavior, you know, you have to have that spark of opportunity. And what that means, I think, for me, is identifying and aligning the product and features with user needs and understanding what is the opportunity to better serve their needs than the existing products. So oftentimes, I think, again, we go back to education, education, education. Let's make them more aware. Let's share more information about what our product is. But we also have to think about, you know, aligning these other facets that are influencing a behavior beyond just someone's conscious awareness or understanding of what's going on. And I think that, you know, the other thing that really can improve for marketers is we're all familiar with this idea of the customer journey, the sales journey. And in many cases, in traditional approaches, we as marketers or product folks, we have a decent sense of who our customers are, who's going along this journey, right? Who it is we want to perform that call to action, who it is we want to purchase our product, whether it's a specific type of role, a specific industry, et cetera. But the problem with this approach is that understanding demographics doesn't predict behavior. It doesn't give you a sense into those, again, underlying motivations, those hidden barriers that might actually be blocking someone from keeping moving along this funnel. And so behavioral science goes above and beyond traditional market research, traditional demographics, to push past understanding not just who our customers are right now, but where they're going and what we need to drive them along the way. So it basically gives us this targeted list of user needs that we can address, levers that we can pull, served up on a platter.
All right. I'm going to put on the role of skeptic C-suite executive. Cecilia, that's all just, I know my customer. We know our customers. We don't need to spend all this money on research. And you say,
well, you don't need to spend money on research because behavioral science, much of that research has already been done for you. We are building on an existing framework and an existing body of literature that has decades of evidence behind it. And you actually don't need to go out and spend additional money doing user research to benefit from this. Rather, with books, education, you know, arming your teams with this information, you can put yourself two steps ahead just by basing in the fundamentals of human behavior. So I would say that it doesn't have to cost any additional money for your organization. It can actually be the superpower and tool that's really readily available to be taken advantage of by anyone who's interested.
Would a corporate put your corporate hat on? Would you pay for an ad agency that understands this? Would you pay for more for that? Or would you pay or hire them over another agency? How should they express that? And this is not a pitch, by the way.
I certainly think so. And I think, again, that's because ultimately, in my experience, I've seen projects that start with this science as the root be faster, more efficient, more cost effective in the long run.
So the follow-up question is, and I can throw a rock and hit three agencies in town that say, oh, we have a psychologist, or we have somebody that understands behavioral science. So what question do you ask to discern whether these people that are pitching you, or it could be in an interview with your next CMO or marketing director, how do you know? Is there a tell question, or is there what question would you ask if you were going to hire an agency or a marketer for your organization?
Yeah.
This is totally off script, by the way, audience. I'm trying to stump the chump, but you can't do that with a Stanford grad. I'm learning that right now.
There are plenty of chumps who went to Stanford, I'll tell you that, but hopefully I'm not one of them. No, you know, I think the question that I would ask first and foremost is, here, let me tell you about my customer base. Let me tell you the behavior that I'm looking to change or encourage. Where would you start? Where would you root this, right? And generally, if it's an agency worth their salt, they will think about the type of behavior, because we have different theories and different frameworks that help us understand, for example, like one-off behaviors, like a one-time purchase, versus longitudinal behaviors, like staying involved with a subscription over time. So if you can bring to them, this is my population, this is the specific behavior that I'm trying to encourage, what is the theory that you would use to address it? And they're able to give you a specific example of a particular theory or framework that they would be rooting their work in. That's a really, really good sign. I think there's a lot of people, as behavioral science becomes more popular, enters the vanguard, who are able to throw around things like, oh, we'll do nudging, or oh, we'll do choice architecture, which are terms you may be familiar with already. But the problem is, those are kind of like just pulling one tool out of a toolbox and expecting that one tool to be able to build the whole house. Rather, I think it's really about understanding that framework of underlying needs, and then deciding what the subsequent tools are that we're going to use people to push down that sales funnel, right? If you don't start with the theory first, you don't start with the underlying psychology first, and you jump straight into solutions, I think you're going to miss the mark. So that would be my approach there.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I would say any tactical answer you get, move the conversation on. Because if they're talking tactics, that's the very last thing you should even consider. I want to ask you a question. It's another off the books question. You're never going to be a return guest because you just learned that I'm just trying to like make up stuff. No, I'm just so interested. You keep drawing out interesting things to ask. So we've spent some time at the beginning of somebody changing behavior. Pre-contemplation would be the behavioral science word. And now we're looking at what works to help somebody move from the science, we call it action, into maintenance. We could probably say, let's just call that an exchange relationship for business. So you got a customer, right? But there are very specific tools, reward, countering, environmental controls, helping relationships, commitments that are effective at that closing table that are not relevant earlier in the process. Could you speak to how you've used that in the past, or how you've worked with sales on those types of tools and that types of understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as we think about moving from that first signatures drawing on the paper, somebody's ready to incorporate this new tool, we all know that that can be a very vulnerable time. You might discover misaligned expectations or needs that weren't uncovered during the sales process. And so there's a few things that we really want to emphasize as someone onboards and as someone moves into this maintenance phase of having your product become a true part of their life. So you alluded to one of the first ones, which is helping relationships. This is a really, really important time to help emphasize, you know, customer support or help resources that might exist within your company. You really want to be getting your customers looped in and actively asking them to evoke their biggest concerns, questions, etc., and using those resources to help your customers make a plan to get support so they're not floundering and they're not left without somewhere they can go to get their questions answered. You also talked about rewards. You know, one of the things that we did at 23andMe is we tried to give exclusive experiences for people within the first 30 to 60 days of their use of our product. So within those first 30 to 60 days, really highlighting the benefits of joining this community and giving them more payback than may be necessary, just to overemphasize and manage that reinforcing of this behavior that, yes, you are giving us data, you are giving us information, but we're actually giving you something valuable back in return. The other thing that I'd mention here that's really important at this stage is starting to think about what we call stimulus control. And really, stimulus control is all about making your product the center of somebody's ecosystem. So there's opportunities here to encourage customers to upgrade to, say, subscription models, perhaps with a discount for your product. Or if you offer multiple products and solutions, thinking about starting the process to get them into more of those solutions so that they are embedded within your ecosystem, and that really encourages them to stick with you and make it a more robust part of their life. Really, what we want to do here is just reduce those barriers to continuation and really incentivize them to embed your product into their life. And over time, what that does is develop a robust habit.
Incredible insights. Closing questions. How should a listener start on this journey? They've listened to you. They've said, I think this woman's really smart. This is a good way to go. She's had a lot of success in life. What should they do? What's their starting path?
Awesome question. I'm very passionate, as I mentioned, about bridging that gap between academia and industry. And I fully support any executive who wants to become an evangelist for this science in their organization. Just anecdotally, that's how I've had so much success spreading this and spreading the success of behavioral science in my organizations, is being an evangelist and teaching this stuff to anyone who wants to listen. So I'd recommend that executives start with a fantastic book that I can recommend. It's called What Your Customer Wants and Can't Tell You. It's by Melina Palmer. She is a fantastic behavioral scientist and really very practical. She breaks these concepts we talked about today and more into super actionable and practical insights that you can apply to your business. Another similar book that I'd recommend would be Nancy Harhut's Using Behavioral Science in Marketing. And if anyone's listening on more of the product strategy or development side, I'd also recommend checking out Start at the End by Matt Wallert. And then if you're super brave, if you want to dig in even more, I would take a stab by Googling and researching some of these theories we've talked about today yourself. A few resources I'd recommend would be behavioralscientist.org or case studies from, you know, behavioral science consultancies like Irrational Labs.
I feel like you were prepared for that answer. That was a great answer. And there's a couple of books I need to go buy right now. I actually started with Changing for Good, which was the science. Great. I think you represented a professor. And my journey was that I had been in business and sales and marketing work for 20 years. And I knew sometimes what we did worked and sometimes what we did didn't work. And I couldn't figure out what the difference was. And this book was so enlightening as to why what worked when it did. And there is a playbook. Everybody likes a playbook.
Yes.
This is a playbook and it works and it's proven. And you don't have to figure it out anymore. It's figured out. Okay.
That's
you
right.
Personally, what's the one thing you personally have learned about sales or marketing that's most greatly impacted you as a professional? And the answer can't be behavioral science. I'm going to push you beyond that.
Yeah. You know, I think when you work at a place like 23andMe, you hear a lot of really incredible stories and really personal, deep stories from people who use your product. Very similar story at Facebook, actually. These are products that deeply, deeply touch consumers' lives. And when you hear from somebody who's found a long-lost family member or discovered a genetic risk for cancer, but are able to take action and save their life, you really very, very, very quickly develop this deep sense of respect and reverence for the stories that have brought your users to you in the first place. And so while I was at 23 in this marketing role, you know, very focused on conversion, very focused on increasing overall revenue, shifting our product mix to our higher end products, we couldn't do that effectively if we didn't understand the weight that this decision had on our customers' lives. And combining these stories, combining these deep motivations with really robust, yes, behavioral science, but also marketing techniques, ultimately is the superpower. And, you know, we saw this at 23andMe and campaigns that I ran that were really based in understanding those deep motivations, those deep stories. In 1 year, we were able to shift the mix of our, you know, premium product, our health product, from under 30% to over 70% in 1 year by developing a series of campaigns that are really, really rooted in what are those key stories, those key needs that are much deeper than, hey, I just want to buy this fun product that I think might be a cool experience to have. So that is really just deeply rooted in how I approach my work moving forward. I always think that there's more to the story. I always think that there's more below the surface. And I think that we can ultimately have a much more effective approach to our work if we start there.
Amazing. Listeners, if you want to reach out and learn more and maybe even hear us, Cecilia, I don't know when you're speaking next. I know you've got a new job rolling at a new company that's going to do amazing things. But how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. Name is spelled Cecilia, C-E-C-I-L-I-A, Langree, L-A-N-G-R-E-E, although I'm sure it'll be in the notes for this show as well. So you can find me there. That'd be the best place to contact me, and happy to chat more on any of these topics. This is something I'm very passionate about, is bringing the science to people who can actually put it into action for better outcomes.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Centricity. I know I've learned a great deal from you, and I will continue to follow your work. And for listeners, if you've gained some insights today, please reach out and say hello and at least just offer a word of encouragement. These really are practical insights of how to deliver the right messages, do the right things to the right people at the right time as they go through change. And that's it's a game changer. It does make substantive difference in business. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.